Welcome to Stories from Palestine podcast. My name is Crystal and I live in Palestine and I'm studying the tour guide program at the Bethlehem Bible College. Every week I take you on a journey in Palestine. Sometimes I interview Palestinians and other times I tell you what I learned in the college or during our excursions. And this is the third part of a trilogy about Jericho. In episode 14, we drove from Bethlehem towards Jericho and we visited the Good Samaritan Inn and Makam Nabi Musa, the tomb of Moses. In last week's episode, episode 17, we visited the city of Jericho with the archaeological site at Tell el-Sultan, the cable cars on the Mount of Temptation, the sycamore tree, and Hisham's palace, one of the Umayyad desert palaces. And this week, we will continue and we will finish our tour around Jericho. At the end of this episode, I am going to tell you more about the special Christmas in Bethlehem episode for next week. And that will be the last one for this season. You will hear a teaser so you can get in the mood. And I will tell you more about the special donation request for this Christmas episode. But first, let's hit the road again and learn more about the Jordan River, the Dead Sea, and Qumran. In our first episode, we heard from tour guide Kamal Mukarkar. He told us about Makam Nabi Musa. And in this episode, he will tell us more about the archaeological site at Qumran and especially the Essenes community that lived there. But first, let me tell you more about the Jordan Valley, the Jordan River, and a special location on the Jordan River that has been venerated for many centuries as the baptismal site of Jesus. We are driving through the Jordan Valley. The landscape here is flat, and generally it is very hot here, especially in the summer. But most of the time, actually, it's warm here, even in the winter. The houses here are scattered around, so we left the city behind us, and we are in the West Bank. This is the area of Palestine that is on the West Bank of the River Jordan, so that's why we call it the West Bank, even though it is the eastern part of Palestine, so that's sometimes confusing, but it's the West Bank of the Jordan River. And even though this area is not part of the State of Israel that was established in 1948, the West Bank is military occupied since 1967. Large parts of the West Bank, about 60% actually, are under full Israeli military control. And the rest is divided between areas A and B. This was stipulated in the Oslo Accords. Area A is under so-called Palestinian Authority control, and it does not have Israeli military that is continuously present, even though it is very common for the Israeli army to come and raid Palestinian cities and arrest Palestinians. Usually they come in the middle of the night. But Area A is under Palestinian control. It is usually the larger cities that are Area A at the build-up areas. And Area B is under the Palestinian municipal control. So let's say Palestinians there, they take care of their own garbage collection, they have to repair their own streets, they take care of all the infrastructure, electricity, water, and so on. But in Area B, they don't have security control, so they can't have Palestinian police operating there. And that leads to certain problems. For example, the police can't come there to arrest criminals or molesters or to prevent drugs traffic, for example. And this situation of Israeli control in the West Bank also means that Palestinian landowners are not allowed to work on their land or even to dig a water well, to build a shelter for the sun or to even improve the road to their fields without a permission from a military commander. So they have to go to the Israeli military commander, but these permits are rarely given. Other problems, especially here in the Jordan Valley, are with closed military zones. on the agricultural lands of the Palestinians, they do military trainings. I once heard from a Bedouin family that I met in the Jordan Valley that soldiers actually took their donkey and some of their sheep because the animals were trespassing into a military zone. And then they had to pay a large sum of money to release the arrested animals. So we're driving through the Jordan Valley and heading towards the baptismal site on the Jordan River. And this is a site that is often visited by religious pilgrims. It is called Qasr al-Yahud, and it is part of the Israeli National Parks Authority, despite the fact that it is in the West Bank and should therefore be run by the Palestinian Authority. But we are in Area C here. So it's a bit the same story as what we heard before at the Good Samaritan Inn. The name Qasr al-Yahud came about because of the nearby Greek Orthodox monastery of St. John the Baptist. And it looks a bit like a castle, and in Arabic, castle is Qasr. And because the tradition tells that in the 14th century before Christ, the Israelites crossed the river here at this spot, they started calling it al-Yahud, meaning of the Jews, Qasr al-Yahud. But on the other side of the Jordan, there are also Christian pilgrims that come to visit when they are on their holidays or on pilgrimage in Jordan. And on the Jordanian side, they call it al-Mahtaz, which means the immersion in water, baptism. When you reach the site here, you see that the Jordan River is now an extremely narrow stream. The water is very muddy, it's very shallow. It's probably not more than 4 meters wide. You could easily just walk across to the other side and then you'd be in Jordan. In English, this site is referred to as Bethany beyond the Jordan. And it's called beyond the Jordan because there is another Bethany, which is closer to Jerusalem, where the story happened of Jesus raising up Lazarus. And it is now known as the Palestinian neighborhood of Jerusalem, Al-Azariya. Now back to the baptismal site here. In the Bible, we read that a man called John, who was living in the desert and eating very simple food that he found, like locusts and honey, and he was wearing simple camel hair clothes, he lived a kind of hermit life in the desert, and he was preaching about the coming Messiah. He was preparing the Jews at that time to be ready for the Messiah. And it was already a Jewish habit to purify with water. In many archaeological sites, we will find mikvahs, where they would take a ritual bath. John the Baptist used this same purification ritual, but he used to do it here, in the Jordan River, as a sign of rebirth and renewal. It was like a cleansing of the old life with sins and ready for a new life, waiting for the Savior, for the Messiah. Many scholars actually think that John the Baptist was influenced by the Essenes. And the Essenes were a group of Jewish ascetics who lived in the wilderness of Qumran. And later you will hear about that from Kamal. And they had this religious ritual to daily immerse in water to purify. And one day, according to the story, Jesus came to John the Baptist and he wanted to be baptized by John. And at first John didn't think even he was worthy of baptizing Jesus. But then Jesus insisted, and in the Bible it says that as soon as Jesus was baptized and he went up out of the water, the heaven opened and he saw the Spirit of God descending like a dove and alighting on him. And then a voice from the heaven said that this is my Son, whom I love, with whom I am well pleased. And many pilgrims come to this place not only to see the site, but also to get baptized here themselves. There's actually another site that is also known as a baptismal site, and sometimes people wonder which is the real site where John the Baptist was baptizing. And of course, there are different ideas about that. But the other site was appointed only in 1981, and that happened when Qasr al-Yahud was closed because of, at that time, unstable political situations, And so they opened another site south of the Sea of Galilee. So that's in the northern part of the Jordan River. And this is called Yardenit. And it is very well equipped. It can host a lot of groups at the same time. They are also selling and renting the baptismal robes and the towels. So baptism is in that sense made into a business. And it is called Yardenit because the Jordan River in Hebrew is called Nahal Yarden. So Yardenit comes from Yarden, the name in Hebrew. And in Arabic, the Jordan River is called Nahar al-Urdun. Now this river is 251 kilometers long. And it starts from the upper Jordan Valley that is north of the Sea of Galilee. And then it continues south and ends in the Dead Sea. The Jordan River has four main tributaries. And interestingly, they are from different countries. There is water coming in from Lebanon, from Syria, and from Palestine, from the Ajun, Hasbani, Dan, and Banias rivers. And then south of the Sea of Galilee, because the Jordan Valley comes through the Lake of Galilee, the most important are the Zarka and the Yarmouk rivers from Jordan. But there is a problem. Since 1964, the National Water Carrier of Israel started to operate pumping stations and diverting water from the Lake of Galilee to the coastal areas of Israel. And also Jordan and Syria are diverting water from the Yarmouk River. And that is one of the main tributaries to the Jordan River. So this resulted in a severe damage of the ecosystem of the Jordan River, but it also resulted in the shrinking of the Dead Sea. The Dead Sea is about 430 meters below sea level, and it is one of the saltiest water bodies in the world. Its salinity is about 9.6 times higher than that of the ocean. So that means that if you get into the water of the Dead Sea, you don't swim. You can't swim. You will float. You have to lay on your back. You can maybe remember seeing photos of people reading newspapers laying on their back on the Dead Sea. And that's what happens. If you try to swim in it, it's not going to work. And I advise you also, if you ever go to the Dead Sea and you want to go into the water, do not shave. Neither women nor men the day before you visit the Dead Sea, because it bites. In Arabic, the name of the Dead Sea is also Dead Sea, Bahar al-Miyat. And there is literally nothing that lives in this sea. There is no seaweed, no fish, no creatures. The only thing that you will find in it is water, mud, lots of minerals, and salt. There is a beautiful and very famous mosaic floor in the St. George Church in Madaba in Jordan. It's called the Madaba Map, and it's a floor mosaic that shows many important sites in Palestine, many churches, monasteries, holy sites. And on this mosaic map, there is also the Dead Sea. And there is a funny detail, because if you look well, you can see that the fish that are swimming down from the Jordan River towards the Dead Sea, they return. So imagine, the Byzantine mosaic artists already thought of this detail to show the saltiness of the Dead Sea on the Madaba mosaic map, with fish swimming away from the Dead Sea. Now, why is it so low here? Actually, the whole area is very low, the whole Jordan Rift Valley. And this is the result of tectonic plate movements. Tectonic plate movements of the Arabian and the African plate. Millions of years ago, this area was actually sort of lagoon. According to scholars, water from the sea used to come in regularly, but when the tectonic plate movement started and pushed up the land to the west of the Jordan Valley, causing that mountain ridge to form from north to south, that's when the sea became isolated and it only received water from the Jordan River to feed it. And due to the hot weather and to the high evaporation of water and the fact that the influx of fresh water is not very high, the water became very salty. The Dead Sea also contains a lot of minerals that are considered to be good for skincare. So most tourists that come to the Dead Sea do not only come to float on the Dead Sea, but they also cover themselves with mud and then they let it dry and then at some point they will wash it off and their skin becomes very soft and they say it's very good for people who have skin problems. If you want to get some Palestinian Dead Sea products, you can check out the brand Vitalité. I will post a link on the website and in the show notes. There are several online shops where you can order Vitalité. Now, if you want to come and swim in the Dead Sea, you will have to go through one of the paid resorts. It's really almost the only way that you can get to the Dead Sea shore. Because we're here in a border area and unfortunately, there are a lot of minefields and military closed zones in this area. So going to the Dead Sea, you have to go through a paid resort. But I can give you an advice, and that is, if you don't have your own car, because it's not so easy to reach by public transportation, you can book a tour through Hantour.ps. Of course, I'll post the link in the show notes and on the website. The good thing is that they provide for you, for a fixed price, good price, transportation and entrance fee to the Dead Sea resorts. And on Hantour.ps, you also have a great choice for other tours in and around Jericho and basically in the whole West Bank, always with local Palestinian tour guides. Now, from the Dead Sea, we are continuing to our last destination. And there we will listen to Kamal Mukarkar, who will tell us more about this very important site, Qumran, and about the Essenes. Qumran is the place where the Dead Sea Scrolls were discovered in 1947 by Bedouin shepherds, Palestinian Bedouin shepherds. One of them seemingly threw a rock into one of the caves, maybe to see if there was wild animals inside, and he was surprised to hear the sound of breaking pottery. So he went to look, and then he found inside the cave there were jars, clay jars. And inside the jars, there were scrolls with texts written on them. So he took them with him. He didn't know what they were. And according to a popular story here, he had them hanging for a while on his Bedouin tent outside, not knowing their value, not knowing what to do with them. Eventually, he took them to Bethlehem, to the town. And first, nobody was really interested in them. They were written mainly in Hebrew and in Aramaic, and these are languages that generally people in Bethlehem didn't read, except for some of the Syriac community who still know how to read Aramaic. And one of the Syriac antiquities dealer, his name was Khalil Iskander Shaheen, better known in Bethlehem as Kando. Kando realized that these could be valuable. So he sent the shepherds back to the caves to go and look for more. And they did find more. And over time, with several expeditions, they have found many more scrolls and fragments of over 900 manuscripts. They were found in 12 different caves. And these manuscripts date back to at least 1800 years ago. And why are they important? Well, they are important because they tell us more about the life in Palestine in that time, about the community of the Essenes that lived here. And they also contain most of the books that later ended up in the Bible that we know today. Most of the scrolls are now in the Israel Museum and the archaeological site at Qumran. Very interesting to visit, but again, under the Israeli National Parks Authority, even though it's situated in the West Bank, but it's in Area C, so it's under full Israeli military control. But at the archaeological site, you can see the excavations of the buildings that formed the living place of the community of Essenes. And you can now listen to Kamal to know more about the Essenes.
So today we're visiting the Essenes, one of the four Jewish sects that were there at the time of Jesus and shortly before. Speaking about 200 BC till 100 AD, there were the Pharisees, the Sadducees, the Zealots, and the Essenes. The Essenes weren't the major sect. Speaking about their number, that goes around 4,000 people. And there were communities that lived in few different places around the country at that time. And today we're visiting one of these sites, which is Qumran. And Qumran was already an established place long before that. Mentioned in the book of Joshua as part of the villages that the tribe of Judah was supposed to get. But most probably was abandoned during the destruction of the first temple and so on. So this is where these Essenes, kind of a community, brotherhood that came here and wanted to live the way they see right. And the Essenes, when they lived here, they believed in sharing all their properties. Like nobody has something on his own. You want to join in, you bring your property, everything belongs to everybody. And their way of living was a little bit strict. I mean, no food should come from outside the community. They have to work for it hard, as well as there were times where they have to write and rewrite the Old Testament and few other books that they had, their laws and their history and so on. They lived in caves, but they would meet every day in the morning for a ritual bath. And a ritual bath is not just to purify the body. They saw it as also to purify the soul, which was a little bit different than the other Jews around them at that time. So the ritual bath was something very sacred. They did the ritual bath in the morning, before food, before work, after work. The most important meal was the meal in the evening. So anybody want to join the Essenes would come and ask to join, and he will spend a whole 1 year of probation. This person wouldn't be in that final meal at the end of the day, because it's a very important meal. After 1 year, he will join, but still he will not be allowed to talk. So it's a very tough procedure to be one of them. Now, the question was, how can we know how many were here of these Essenes? So it's a good question, but the answer came from, know that the dinner is so sacred and they have to eat together. So let's find the dining room. So after finding the dining room, and also the kitchenware, the bowls and the plates and so on, estimated 200 people used to live here. The Essenes would come here and live and work and so on. So they didn't really feast most of the feast with the Jews in the country. They even looked at the Sadducees in the temple as the sons of dark. They saw themselves as the sons of light. And they differ from even the Pharisees in many aspects, but also they were still Jewish. In terms, they believed in the law of Moses and believed in the ritual purity and the divine punishment of sin, but they did not believe in the resurrection of the body. Going through Qumran, you will find the cisterns and you will find the ritual baths, but also the place where they used to make honey out of dates. And they would work the field. Very hard work here would be done. But also, the most important section when it comes to work is the scriptorium. It's the place where they used to write and rewrite the Bible and the manuscript that they had. They would go in one room and choose what to write today, and then sit and work. With writing, they had tables, and these tables had holes. They would start writing, and when the word Yahweh would come, they have to cleanse their three fingers with water that will go into this in these holes, and the water is running water that they will pour there, cleanse their fingers and continue writing. Finding their tables with these holes is amazing to understand how they did things. To understand the importance of these writings, we need to understand that the oldest Old Testament, which was written in Aramaic that we have in our hand, is the Masoreti from the 10th century. And yes, we have one from the 14th century, which is the translation of the Old Testament into Greek, the Septuagint. And they had some differences. I mean, for Christians, for instance, the story of the virgin will bear a baby, or the young will bear a baby. because the way the Maserati wrote it was the young will bear a baby. And anyways, the word young and virgin in the Aramaic is almost the same word. So was she a virgin or was she young? That was the question. And by finding the scroll of Isaiah, it was clear writings from B.C., and the virgin will bear a baby. That doesn't mean that the Septuagint was always right and the Maserati was wrong. Sometimes it was the opposite. But through the writings, we understood also that they were not only waiting for the Messiah who will have an earthly kingdom, but also they were writing for the Messiah who is heavenly, and he's going to suffer. This explains a lot about Jesus Christ's story. Like when he went to Nazareth and said that he is the one, simply they wanted to kill him. You know, they didn't believe in that. When he went to Kfar Nahum, which is a place where Essenes would live, they believed in him because they were waiting for somebody like Jesus. The Essenes might be the one who followed Jesus at the beginning. I mean, they always prayed towards the sun. They called themselves the sons of light. Jesus himself saying, I'm the light of the world. The scrolls were written in different languages, Aramaic, mainly in Hebrew, Old Hebrew, and some scrolls were even translated into Old Greek. And by finding the place where they printed their coins, and by finding cave number 4 where we found so much coins on the floor and some of the scrolls that were not hidden were just put there, we understood from their coins that they didn't want to deal with the money of the Romans, just like in the temple. But they printed something on their coins, which was the palm tree, because they saw the palm tree as a very sacred tree. It represents the life of a human being living 7 years. There is a female and a male of it. And when it bears date, it needs 9 months exactly. But by the year 67 AD, the revolt against the Romans have started, and they knew they had to do something. And it's an Old Testament tradition that if you have a deal or a contract between you and somebody, you'll have two contracts, one which you call closed and one is open. And the closed one, you put it in a jar and you bury it underground so that the contract will last forever. And they had this tradition, if you want something to last forever, you have to hide it in a jar underground. And this is what they did in the time that they had left. They have hidden as much as they can. And some, I'm sure, they took with them before they had to flee. But the rest was found in cave number 4 with still money on the ground and all the other scrolls that they wanted to sell and so on. And these were the ones that were really harmed the most because they weren't sealed.
Louisa, today we talked a lot about different kinds of water, like, for example, a river. What's a river in Arabic?
Nahal.
And sea?
Bahar.
And a lake?
Wahaira.
And the pool? I want to go swimming in the pool.
Berka.
Hadi. Nahal.
Nahal.
Bahar.
Bahar.
Buhaira.
Buhariya.
Berka.
Berka. Berka.
Shukran, Louise and Hadi. Well, that was it for this week, the last part of the Jericho trilogy. And next week is the last episode of this season. And then I will take a break and I'll be back with new stories mid-January. In order to continue the podcast and all the work that it takes, because it takes quite many hours, to be honest, to make each episode, and without any sponsors or any advertisement, I really rely on donations of the listeners. So that's why I always remind you at the end of an episode that you can donate on the Ko-fi page. And this week, I'm telling you about the special Christmas from Bethlehem episode that will be available next week, Monday. And if you do a Christmas donation, then I, in return, will send your family and friends special Christmas wishes straight from Bethlehem with the link to the Christmas podcast. You can then introduce them in this way to Stories from Palestine podcast and let them get into the real Christmas mood. So what's that going to sound like? Here is a short teaser especially for you. So here we are on a sunny day in the beginning of Star Street. This is traditionally known as the place where Joseph and Mary walked on their way towards, well, towards what?
Towards the Nativity Church.
I am in Bethlehem. I am very famous. Thanks God for this. Yes, because I am the capital of Bethlehem here.
The mayor of Bethlehem, the uncrowned mayor. When is your Christmas? On the 25th of December or with the Orthodox in January?
I think, yes, it's in January.
You're not sure, but you think so.
I did not been to church since many years, that's why.
There are actually three Christmases, because there's the Armenians also.
وبتلحم صار فيها حدث كبير وفرح كبير وامل كبير.
I hope that was enough to make you want to hear more. So please look at the link in the show notes or go to the Facebook page, Instagram, the website of Stories from Palestine. And if you want to make a donation, you can read there how to do it. It would be highly appreciated. If you leave the email addresses of your friends and family, I can send them an email. Or if you prefer, I can send you the email and you can forward it to them. Thanks for listening, and until next week.